Welcome to the jungle. I am Jim Rome. The program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. The Lakers made a trade, but not the trade. I want to get to that a little bit later on. I talked about what happened to them last night against Indiana, but have not gotten into really at length other than my conversation with Chris Mannix about Anthony Davis and whether or not they can make that deal before the trade deadline. You know, they're desperate for it. You know, Davis is desperate for it, but the Pelicans aren't. And why would they make that move? Unless they get what they want. But why wouldn't you wait? I thought Chris Mannix made a very good point. If that's the most important move in the history of that franchise, why would you not give yourself every chance for the biggest return possible? Namely, why would you not wait until summertime when the Celtics can jump in? Lakers, meantime, don't want to negotiate with themselves. Why they say things like, well, yeah, we're pulling out of the bidding. Sure you're not. The Lakers need to make that deal right now. They want to make that deal right now. But then again, the Pelicans don't need to. That's coming up momentarily. Dana White, president of the UFC, also will be joining me in a moment. Dear Rome, the only enjoyable part of that damn parade was those drunk Sam Adams swilling D-bags knocking each other out and their pasty, gross, hairy spare tires flopping all over the Boston streets. Matt in Vancouver, right on brand, talking about how fat, pasty, and lacking in discipline and nutrition the Chouds are. But he'd say that about any American. Hi, Jim. Did you see someone throw a bra on the windshield of Tom Brady's duck boat? I'd have taken credit, except it was a 38 triple D. Do you happen to know if Ray in St. Paul moved to Boston? Signed Sarah T. in Providence. Man, she's salty as ever. And even saltier after they win, as I've noticed. UFC 234 is live in Australia. Dana White will be joining me momentarily. So I mentioned that the city of Los Angeles was making moves last night. Because hours after declaring that they were pulling out of the negotiations with New Orleans for Anthony Davis, the Lakers went ahead and they pulled the trigger and they made a monster move in a deal that is expected to be finalized today. They sent Seve Mykhailiuk and a second-round pick to Detroit for Reggie Bullock. Time to get the car flags out, Laker Nation. We did it! We did it!
We did it! We did it!
Reggie Bullock!
We did it!
Reggie!
We did it.
Reggie!
We did it! We did it!
Reggie Bullock!
We did it! We did it!
All those Reggie Photoshops you've been working on are finally ready. Look, I'm not here to clown the move. It's not a bad deal, actually. It's actually kind of a good deal for the Lakers. I mean, nobody's going to confuse Reggie with a 25-year-old, 6'10" guy, averaging nearly 30-13, who's a six-time All-Star, and a perennial MVP candidate, and a future Hall of Famer. But old Reg, he's not bad. He's not bad because it gives him something they don't have, something they desperately needed, an outside shooter. And they got him for next to nothing at all. Svi, and a second-round pick. And don't get me wrong. Nobody loved a good Svi for three. Shout more than me. But my guy was hitting less than 32% from deep. So you weren't hearing too many Svi for threes. Man, a nice ring to it. But the actual shot had a solid clank to it. This guy might develop into something bigger and better down the road, but the Lakers are not looking down the road. They're looking at the here and the now. So let's talk about the here and the now. Because it's pretty insane. Starting with the fact that the Lakers announced that they were pulling, through reports, that they were pulling out of trade talks, pulling out of trade talks with Pelicans. Brad Turner of the LA Times wrote, "The Lakers have pulled out of conversations aimed at trying to acquire New Orleans All-Star forward Anthony Davis because of the Pelicans' quote, outrageous trade requests," according to a person with knowledge of the situation. End quote. And that is so awesome. That really is awesome. You know what that's like? It's like telling the host of a party that you can't make it when you were never invited to the party in the first place. That's like breaking up with somebody when you aren't going out with them. Like, you know what? I don't want to be nominated for a Grammy. I don't want that. I don't want to be nominated for a Grammy this year anyway. Yeah, well, cool, because you weren't. Yeah, I'm sure New Orleans was absolutely crushed to hear that the Lakers were pulling out of the bidding. Oh, you're not going to call us. You're not going to call us with trade offers that we're not interested in anyway? Great. That'll free up even more time for anything other than hearing about your package of the 2017-2018 Lakers reunited. The Lakers just announced that they were not going to call the Pelicans anymore when the Pelicans weren't even answering the phone in the first place. The Lakers announced they're not negotiating with the Pelicans when the Pelicans weren't even countering their offers. They weren't even picking up the phone. They were sending it right to voicemail. And then the Lakers made a big show of deleting the Pel's number from their contacts. And I love the fact that they called the Pelicans' requests outrageous. You know, it's like something somebody says when they get kicked out of or blocked from a fancy restaurant. You know, like, sir, you cannot come into Mastro's wearing jorts, ripping hits off a vape. Yeah, well, this is outrageous. Your demands are outrageous. I'm taking my business elsewhere. Yeah, you really think the maitre d' at Mastro's is sweating it if you scream, this is outrageous, when they kick you to the curb? Especially when they know that you're going to rummage around in your car for a jacket and a shirt to try to get back in. Because you know that's what the Lakers are going to do. Rummage around in the car for a jacket and a place to ditch their vape. Yeah, I don't think the Pelicans saw the Lakers trade Svi to Detroit and think, damn, we could have had that guy. What I'm getting at is trading Svi to Detroit is not, quote, taking their business elsewhere. You know why that is? Because the Lakers aren't taking their business elsewhere. They're threatening to quit negotiations in an attempt to jumpstart negotiations. They're threatening to quit negotiations in an attempt to get Dell Demps to begin negotiations. They're threatening to quit negotiations in an attempt to get some leverage. Everybody knows it because everybody knows the Pelicans do not need to negotiate right now. And yes, I know the Lakers are sick of negotiating with themselves, sick of negotiating against themselves. It makes sense because they are negotiating with themselves, and it is a bad spot to be in. LA is desperate to get Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis is desperate to get to LA. The Pelicans are not desperate to accommodate either one of them. In fact, they're probably really pissed at both. Pissed at Davis for not wanting to be there, and pissed at LA. The last thing they want to do is send him where he wants to go. The last thing they want to do is help the Lakers. The last thing they want to do is send him within the conference. And because they're pissed at all that, LA better blow them away, or they're not going to do the deal. And the fact is, LA probably can't blow them away. Because no matter how good that deal is, New Orleans knows that the deal will be there for them this summer. Whatever LA can offer them now, they can offer them this summer, and the Pelicans know it. And all they have to do is grind out a few awkward months with Anthony Davis, and that deal will be there. And you know what? Better yet, not only will the Lakers deal be there for them this summer, but the Celtics can jump in the fight too. And now, so can the Clippers, who have cleared the deck, and they can jump in that fight. And then also you've got a team that's going to have the number one pick overall, and they can jump in there too. So why would Dell Demps and the Pelicans make that deal right now? The answer is they wouldn't. I'll finish that thought in a minute. As promised, we're joined right now by UFC president. UFC 234 is coming up. Whitaker v. Gastelum. Saturday, live from Australia, 10 p.m. Eastern on pay-per-view. He is a friend of the program. Dana White is my guest. Dana, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
Good, good, Dana. So we're a few days out. You got a big card on Saturday night that features the middleweight championship, but also the return of Anderson Silva. How fired up for you are you for UFC 234, and how does that one look?
I'm so excited. I actually fly to Australia tonight. I can't wait for this fight. Israel Adesanya, 15-0, undefeated, the rising star in the UFC, taking on the legend Anderson Silva. Anderson Silva said his whole career, I want to fight myself. I want to fight, you know, a blueprint of me. Well, he's got it this Saturday night. Israel Adesanya is a stand-up kickboxer, and it should be awesome. And then the main event, Robert Whittaker, the champion from Australia, against Kelvin Gastelum. Both guys are knockout artists, and I don't see this going five rounds.
Dana White joining us. UFC 234 is pay-per-view. It's coming up Saturday night. Dana, you mentioned the flight to Australia. What do you do? I mean, do you try to kind of rest and recover, or are you getting a lot of work done when you're in the air and you've got all that downtime?
No, I try to when I go to somewhere like Australia, I'm definitely going to sleep. I'm going to get some sleep on the plane, and then we hit the ground running. As soon as I get there, I have like an hour to get to the press conference. So, no, I will sleep on the plane.
And what's that like when you get on the ground? That's going to be wild, right? Like you get there and you've got that kind of production in front of you, and you've got an hour to get there. What's it like when you get on the ground?
Yeah, it's go, go, go until, you know, till we're done that day. It's awesome, though. Going into fight week like this, I love it. I couldn't be more fired up, especially with, you know, a fight like this fight. I'm so excited for both of these fights. I'm really excited to see this Israel Adesanya Silva fight, too.
Adesanya's got a ton of it, which I want to get to in a minute, but go back to Whittaker. Whittaker has not lost for 5 years. Whittaker's fought on cards in Australia before, but now he's returning home to Australia to headline a card as the middleweight champion of the world. What do you think that crowd is going to be like when he enters the arena on Saturday?
It's going to be insane, yeah. So this thing sold out in 7 minutes. The whole show sold out in 7 minutes. This place is going to be packed. The Australian fans are incredible. It's a very fun, energetic environment. And think about this. Israel Adesanya is from New Zealand, and Whittaker is from Australia. If both of these guys win, this fight with Israel Adesanya and Anderson Silva is for the number one contender position. So if whoever wins that night, but if it ends up being Israel Adesanya and Robert Whittaker, New Zealand versus Australia, it's going to be madness.
We're talking to Dana White. The fact that that thing sold out in 7 minutes is pretty amazing. Now, I had Silva on the show, Dana, a few weeks back. I cannot believe this guy is still going at it as hard as he is at 43. How do you explain that? What makes that guy tick?
You know what? He's a stud. He's one of these guys that's always taking care of himself. You know, a lot of the guys that you see burn out fast in this sport are the guys that party a lot and don't take care of their bodies. Anderson Silva, even when he's taken a lot of time off, he stays in the gym, he stays healthy. He's always trying to evolve as a martial artist, and that's how he stayed in the game so long.
All right, so Silva's going to fight Adesanya. Adesanya frequently gets compared to a younger version of Silva. For those who have not seen Israel fight yet, is that a good comparison? How fair is that?
Absolutely. It's like I said, Anderson always wanted to fight himself. He wanted to fight a blueprint of himself. Well, he's got it in Adesanya. Yes, he fights just like a young Anderson Silva. He can pull off things that other people can't. It's pretty amazing.
Dana White, my guest. Dana, I mentioned that from the outside anyway, Israel's got this it, like the guy's a star. And not just how he finishes guys, but how he promotes fights. Is it safe to say that if he were to win on Saturday night, that people are about to see his name on top of fight cards for a long time?
I think so, yeah. I mean, if he can get through Anderson Silva, but then once he gets through Anderson Silva, then he's got to fight Robert Whittaker, you know? And, you know, if Whittaker wins on Saturday night, and Whittaker right now is the most underrated champion in the UFC.
All right, so back to Whittaker. Whittaker is a guy that I know you've been watching since The Ultimate Fighter, and as you've said, quote,
correct,
every punch he throws has bad intentions. What's your sense as to his mood and his approach coming into the fight?
Yeah, I think that him and Gastelum are exactly the same. Both guys move forward. Both guys throw every punch with bad intentions, and both guys are knockout artists. You know, I think it's going to be fireworks, man. It's going to be a great fight.
All right, so Whittaker's a beast. He has not lost in half a decade. One more thought about Gastelum. I mean, how big of a threat is he to Whittaker?
Yeah, big. I mean, if you look at the guys that this guy's beat, he goes into fights always the underdog. You know, He's beat Jacare Souza, Michael Bisping, Johnny Hendricks, and the list goes on and on. This kid, at middleweight, he's tough and he hits hard.
UFC 234 is coming up. That is pay-per-view. You know, also the big thing here, Dana, is, and I've seen on ESPN, they are going so hard and they're really promoting. When you, and you're working with them right now, when you consider where ESPN was back in the day with the sport and with your company and how far they've come, what's that feel like and what's that deal been like for you so far?
Yeah, it's been incredible. And these guys were partners before the deal even started. They've been incredible for us, you know, and we've reciprocated. It's been a good relationship already. And, yeah, and just for the record, the prelims are on ESPN Saturday night. So you can check out the prelims on ESPN and then go right into the pay-per-view. But, yeah, it's been amazing, man. I'm obviously a very proud moment for me and the UFC.
Dana White joining us. Dana, you were pretty critical of Oscar De La Hoya for his involvement.
I've been telling you how to do that.
Is that me or is that you, Dana?
I've been telling you how to do that.
Dana, was that me or you? That's definitely not us. Kind of cool. Dana White joining us. Putting him on hold. Trying to see if we're going to spin another record or so. UFC 234 is coming up this weekend. It is pay-per-view. It's live from Australia, 10 p.m. Eastern. He is the president of UFC. There are some good fights on that card, and we will get back to that in a moment. I was asking him about Oscar De La Hoya, not in the sense that you wanted me to, but in the sense of what do you do with a fighter when he has stayed too long? Also, an update on Conor McGregor and Habib and John Jones, all part of the interview, which I'm going to get to. In the meantime, we're going to try and reestablish connection to Dana White, UFC 234 this weekend. Meantime, let me set you up. Telephone number again. We are open phones the rest of the way, 1-800-636-8686. I've done a lot of interviews with Dana White over the years on radio and TV. That's never happened before. Not sure what that was all about. Kind of cool. In addition to that, we are running fat this segment.
Fat.
But I am looking for a phone call. Also, hit me on Twitter at Jim Rome. I mentioned the Super Bowl ended, but there were still fireworks in the ATL. There was still business to be done in the ATL. The Super Bowl ended, and then we went to the Stripper Bowl. I will take a timeout right now. We'll see whether or not we can reestablish contact with Dana White. If not, UFC 234 this weekend, live, pay-per-view. Anderson Silva, et al. Really good card. Whitaker. That is on pay-per-view at 10 p.m. Eastern. All right, we're coming right back. Don't go anywhere. You're in the jungle. I'm Jim Rome. Either we finish up with Dana White or we go to your phone calls and we talk about the Stripper Bowl. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
How about Dana White? We got cut off. That was kind of weird. And then I thought we were done, but then we found Dana White. He said, no, let's finish what we started. So I've got a couple of more moments with him. UFC 234 is coming up this weekend in Australia. It is pay-per-view, and we do have a few more moments. Appreciate you, Dana. Thanks for coming back on.
No, yeah, I could tell a tough question was coming, so that's my new system for tough questions.
You just start playing a record like that? That was smooth. That was good.
Yeah.
Not so tough.
That was weird.
Yeah, listen, actually, not such a tough question, but I just want to go someplace else because we're running out of time. Last week, the Nevada State Athletic Commission announced suspensions for Habib and Conor coming out of UFC 229. Habib gets 9 months, Conor 6, retroactive to October 6th. What do you make of the suspensions? In your mind, were they fair?
What I don't think was fair was, listen, I understand that these guys have to make a statement. You can't have guys fighting after the fight, okay? It's one thing we can never have, or before the fight. And but the $500,000 to me was, you know, that's a big number. $500,000 that kid got fined, that was a bit excessive.
All right, now Habib's camp says that he will not fight until his teammates have been reinstated, which would be October of this year. What do you make of that? Like, are you okay with that, or does he need to get back in the cage sooner than that?
Yeah. No, we you know, we're working on that right now with them. But the one thing, I absolutely agree with the athletic commission on that one. Bad enough, you know, the fighters are in their fight. You cannot have the corner men jumping in and fighting and you know, all the things that went on leading up to that fight with the corner and their teammates. That can never happen.
Dana White joining me for a few more moments. The committee also approved a one-fight conditional license, Dana, for John Jones to fight at UFC 235 next month after his last fight was moved to California because of the presence of a trace amount of M3 steroid in December. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I don't blame them for doing that either. I mean, if you look at John Jones' past, you know, he's going to have to prove himself again to everybody. The athletic commission, the fans, the list goes on and on, you know. But he went through this entire camp, obviously didn't test positive for anything. That, you know, the stuff that was in there was proven that it was from old use. And, you know, I'm happy for him. He needs to keep his personal life intact. I want to keep him busy so that, you know, we can see the best out of John Jones before he retires.
You know, Danny, you just touched on it, but let me ask you this. I mean, you and I have talked about him over the months, the years. I mean, there's no denying this guy's talent. There's no denying his potential. Is there any part of you that gets tired of the drama with Jones? Have you ever gotten to the point where you thought to yourself, officially, this guy's just more trouble than he's worth, and I'm just going to move on without him?
Yeah, I you know, we've done that. We've you know, this guy is sat out while he's dealt with his problems, and we moved on. The division moved on. The company moved on. And, you know, this time, hopefully, this is the last time, and John has his stuff together. I'd really, really like to see him reach his full potential before he's done.
And then a final thought about Connor. There's been talk about Connor facing Cowboy Cerrone when he's reinstated. He called out Connor. Connor responded. How likely is that fight? Have talks for that fight started?
Yeah, listen, if these two want to fight each other, I'm cool with it. If you look at, first of all, look at what Cowboy's accomplished in his career. You know, he's broke tons of records here at the UFC, and he was an underdog going into this last fight against Hernandez, this young up-and-coming killer, and Cowboy completely destroyed this kid. And, yeah, I'm down with it. If these two want to fight, I'll make it happen.
He is UFC president Dana White. You've got UFC 234. It is live from Australia. It's sold out in 7 minutes, 10 p.m. Eastern on pay-per-view. Dana, I appreciate you coming back on, man. I thought that was a pretty cool trick when that Oscar De La Hoya name came up and you popped that record in there, man. That was smooth.
Thanks, buddy. All right. Always a pleasure, my friend.
You too, Dana. Have a great flight. Talk to you soon. Good luck with it. Dana White, he didn't do that. We have a third-party setup, and you never know what's going to happen. He heard the same thing we did. Like, he's like, damn, what's going on with that? He laughed. He told Hawk. He was, you like that? Because I knew there was a tough question coming, so I just put that record on. The great thing about Dana White, so we had done the interview. He had got his promotion. And normally when something like that happens and it's not the fault of the person you're interviewing, generally their thought is, hey, man, I'm good. I did my job. I got my promotion. I'm going to keep moving. There's a relationship there. And that's not what he did. He called back and he said, let's finish. This is what happened in the middle of the interview. Dana White joining us. Dana, you were pretty critical of Oscar De La Hoya for his involvement.
I've been telling you how to do that.
Is that me or is that you, Dana?
I've been telling you how to do that.
I've heard all the tricks. Whenever there's a question that a guest doesn't want to answer, or a question that a guest thinks is maybe going to put them in a bad spot. I've heard all the tricks, you know, where they say, excuse me, I didn't hear that. When they heard that perfectly, it's a way to get me to repeat the question, to buy them some time to think about it. Or if I ask a question, there is that famous, yeah, I'm by the pool. I can't hear it. We have a bad connection. Can you repeat that? Or I'm by the pool. Yeah, I'm going through a tunnel. Or like Dana, when you hear a question about De La Hoya, you just play a record. Dana White joining us. Dana, you were pretty critical of
just
Oscar
pop some
De La
funk
Hoya
in there.
His involvement.
I've been telling you how to do that.
Is that me or is that you, Dana? And my favorite part about that was, I'll be listening to that, it's like right on cue, too. It's not like he started it and then didn't want to do it. He didn't even answer the question. Dana White joining us. Dana, you were pretty critical of Oscar De La Hoya for his involvement. I mean, it almost came up right under as soon as I mentioned De La Hoya. Listen to that. Dana White joining us. Dana, you were pretty critical of Oscar De La Hoya for his involvement. So good. Like, I couldn't even finish the question. And we know Dana. I've done Dana for years. If Dana doesn't want to answer a question, Dana just doesn't answer a question. Dana doesn't have to go with that, can you repeat that? I'm at the pool. Yeah, I'm in a tunnel. Dana, I know Dana. He'll say, I'm not going to answer that. Or he'll just give you a short answer, which would suggest that he's not going to answer that. Dana, you were pretty critical of Oscar De La Hoya for his involvement. What Dana's not going to do is pop some funk. And how do I know that he didn't not want to answer it? He called back. One email in response to that. Dear Rome, Dana White, once again with the straight fire, the Spider Silva bout has got to be one of the best non-main event bouts that has come along in quite a while. And the Whitaker fight is about to be one for the books. In the day and age of baseball player holdouts and one of the most anemic Super Bowls in recent memory, the UFC has consecutive sold-out events in Brazil and Australia. The appeal is worldwide. And real men, no matter what corner of the globe, just get it. There is no amount of nuance that the weenies can put on that. Step aside. Sincerely. Posting fake one-star reviews of your girlfriend's favorite restaurant the week before Valentine's Day. Keto-friendly energy drinks. Rigging your family's Super Bowl squares pool. CarMax making an offer to the Lakers. And ruptured eardrums. War photos emerging of Dana White standing in an early UFC octagon holding weapons. War the event staff at Rod Laver Arena accidentally leaving out some tennis rackets and umpire chairs for UFC 234. Joaquin. I like him leading with posting fake one-star reviews of your girlfriend's favorite restaurant the week before Valentine's Day. And the event staff at Rod Laver Arena accidentally leaving out tennis rackets. Yeah, because Anderson Silva's going to break out a racket. And this email says, Dear Dana, real badass track you're bumping there, Gramps. Is it Penny Jukebox Night at the Greasy Spoon? Dana, you were pretty critical of Oscar De La Hoya for his involvement. I've been telling you how to Is that me or is that you, Dana? Is it Penny Jukebox Night at the Greasy Spoon? Those third-party hookups generally can be pretty dicey. I'm glad that went the way that did. SoCal Jeff, he tweets, why can't that happen when Matt in L.A. calls? It probably could. It wouldn't be that hard for Albie to take care of that. All right, back with it. Hit me up. Last segment, 1-800-636-8686. Maybe a thought on the stripper bowl because by tomorrow it's too late. If you don't want to hear that, call me instead. If you want to hear that, don't call. If you want a sports update, here it is.
You look so good, fantastic man.
I tell you what, that sounds even better. The full song, the full bump. William Onyebar, fantastic man. I loved it when that thing, and I have no idea what happened. I don't know if that third party... When a call goes on hold, that's what they have on hold. But isn't that great music to play on hold? Fantastic, man. I think it's an ode to Dana White. You got to put that in your rotation, Alvin. You got to bump that once a week anyway. All right, that bell means it's going to happen. Brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get excellent customer service and low prices at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. The Ask the Pros is from Nikki. Romy, would you be upset if one of your boys wanted to get a tattoo at 18? What would your advice be? Unwore, big dudes with tiny Superman tats. Thanks, Nikki. Interesting question. I don't have ink. I never even had like one of those nights where I went on a bender and we said, screw it, and I got one and I regret it. I'm not anti-ink. Like, I see some ink, which I think is really cool and representative of something really noteworthy, a reminder, something that's important. I'm not anti-ink per se. I'm anti-stupid ink. I'm anti-regrettable ink. I'm anti-impulsive ink. So if one of my boys were to come to me and want to get a tattoo at 18, or if one of my boys were to just get a tattoo at 18 without coming to me, yeah, I might be a little disappointed if I think it's something that they're going to regret. You know, wait till you're mature enough to make that decision. I'm not sure at 18 I would trust either one of them, especially given whatever the circumstances are. Like if Jake were to go away to college as a freshman, go out on some bender and get wrecked, and then he and his boys end up in Madison somewhere one night, and they get ink of something really stupid, yeah, I'd have a problem with that. You know, I don't know. The choices, I just know how I was mentally and emotionally at 18. I was making really stupid decisions. I would not have trusted myself to make a good decision at 18 regarding a needle. But then again, Jake, I've said this about Jake. As an example, Jake's a really different 17-year-old than I was at 17. He's way more mature. His life, his body. I'm constantly telling my kids, hey, listen. I'm on you, not because I want to. I'm not on you for any kind of power trip. I'm not on you because I want to hear myself talk. Like, my life worked out great. This is your life, Junior. This is your life. You need to make good choices. So make a good choice for you because you're going to have to live with it the rest of your life. Hope that helps, Nikki. No, I'm not opposed to ink per se. I'm opposed to dumb ink. Like Hawk, I'd have a lot of conversations with. He's done some weird things, man, some dumb things. 1-800-636-8686. All right, so if Bill Belichick and Brian Flores are painting their Mona Lisa on defense on Sunday, and that wasn't your kind of Super Bowl, don't worry. There were lots of other bowls to choose from the last couple of days. Animal Planet, of course, had the Puppy Bowl. New Orleans had the Boycott Bowl. Nooch had the bowl of dank that he reeked of when he found me on Radio Row. And the Gold Room Club in the ATL had the Stripper Bowl. The Stripper Bowl was everything that the Super Bowl was not. Downright excessive and over the top. And for all the bureaucratic red tape that Atlanta sliced through to make sure that strip clubs could stay open on Super Bowl Sunday, by far the biggest gentlemen's club party of the week went down on a Monday. Because two nights ago, the 404-based hip-hop label Quality Control hosted the Stripper Bowl as a bookend blowout for the weekend. And they made sure that all the top-tier talent that flew into town to work a pole did not leave until Tuesday. Now, what made the Stripper Bowl on Monday night newsworthy was not the guest list, although it did include 2 Chainz, Tip Harris, Trey Songz, and Alvin Kamara. No, what made it newsworthy was the 600 girl in cold, hard singles that rained down on every square inch of the 2-story, 7,500-square-foot nightclub turned bank vault. Remember Sean Payton wheeling in a replica Lombardi and 200,000 in ones? Remember how nice that looked? Triple that Fan it out. Drop it out of the strip club sky. Make it rain. Man, make it freaking pour. Again, I'm not a strip club aficionado, despite what the Miss Pac-Man high scores might say in Detroit. But there is something absolutely eye-popping about watching a TMZ video in which a bunch of dudes haul in bankers' boxes of the cleanest, crispest G-dubs you have ever seen, only to absolutely litter them. Litter that joint in over a half a mil. And if that weren't enough, and why should it be? Quality control rapper Lil Baby arrived to the club in a damn chopper. Now, I know what you're thinking. What kind of a strip joint has a hella landing pad on the roof? Well, it turns out the Gold Room doesn't. So Lil Baby landed the egg beater in the freaking parking lot. There are power moves, and then there's landing a whirly bird in the parking lot of a strip club on a Monday night. Sufficient to say, Lil Baby is a far cry from the weekday patron Rex in the ABQ.
Is there anything more pathetic in this world than middle-aged strip club guy rolling into the lot at 11:30 a.m. on a Tuesday in his vet and tossing the keys to the valet who proceeds to shoehorn that piece of crap between two lifted Dodge Rams? Then this guy combs back his receding widow's peak before hitting up the ATM in the club with a $9 withdrawal fee, then proceeds to chat up the bartender while partaking in the, quote, prime rib buffet that still has marks where the jockey was hitting it.
Yeah, nothing about that phone call was what you see in these videos which are floating around the internet right now. In fact, exactly the opposite. I'll say this, at least my man AK seemed to have salvaged his weekend because this dude was bent to hell when he talked to me about that no call in the NFC Championship game when we were on the road together last week.
That's all that matters. We win.
I see both sides. Yeah. I think it's not the reason you lost, but if they get the call right, you would have won.
It's the reason we lost.
Pretty sure Alvin Kamara's Monday night in the Gold Room was better than his Sunday 2 weeks ago in the Superdome. But I respect him for keeping it real. The real winners, though, are the pole artists who needed rakes and garbage bags to clean up all their green cheddar. Mondays normally suck, especially if you've already worked the weekend. But I'm guessing anybody who got that call two nights ago is pretty glad they picked up. But they can't hear me right now because there's too much money in their ear.
I can't hear you.
There's too much money in my
hand. I can't hear you.
I can't hear you. I'll call you back.
0 to 100.
Man, what's more embarrassing? Johnny saying that, or those idiots cackling behind him? Them. But it's close. Now I'm done. My thanks to Terry Stotts, back in hour number one, Trailblazers head coach. Chris Mannix, also in hour number one. UFC president Dana White was a great sport when Fantastic Man kicked in. You have an amazing day. Don't forget, I've got a podcast dropping later on today. Hines Ward, Ep 69 of the Jim Rome Podcast. And if you're not there for the interview and you want the voicemails, we will have them. My thanks to the XR4TI. Pretty good job by you clones. Let's run it back tomorrow. See you then. I'm out.